This is Jim Inkster. Coming today on the show, we'll visit with Reagan Carter of Planned Parenthood. She has some thoughts about a bill in the Louisiana legislature that cleared its first hurdle this week that would require doctors to have admitting privileges within 30 miles at a hospital of where they perform abortions. This could shut down abortion providers in Louisiana. Also, Claire Cruising with the Coalition for Medicare Choices on some issues involving cuts to Medicare Advantage. We'll hear from Sam Irwin. He's written a book about crawfish, one of Louisiana's favorite topics, food staples. And Darlene Rowland from the Farmers Market, the Red Stick Farmers Market. She'll be in studio as well. Now the news on 89.3 WRKF in Baton Rouge. This is Jim Inkster. You are listening to 89.3 WRKF in Baton Rouge. 297-5633 is your number. Outside our area, please call 877-217-5757. InksterShow@WRKF.org if you prefer to contact us via email. Our guest to start is Reagan Carter. She is the Public Relations Director for Planned Parenthood in Louisiana. And the big story of the week from the Capitol thus far was a move by the House Health and Welfare Committee to advance a bill that would require physicians to have admitting privileges at hospitals within 30 miles of where they perform abortions. Some say this would shut down abortion accessibility in Louisiana. And the bill, surprisingly, is sponsored by State Representative Katrina Jackson, chairwoman of the Legislative Black Caucus, a Democrat who is in accord with Governor Bobby Jindal on House Bill 388. Good morning, Reagan Carter.
Good morning, Jim. Thank you so much for having me this morning.
Reagan is a native of Zachary, degrees from Southern and Tulane Universities, and she is involved with this issue. How significant is this bill?
Well, Jim, this bill is very significant. As you mentioned, this bill could potentially close down three of the five existing abortion facilities here in Louisiana. And this bill is, of course, as we know, targeted as an admitting privileges bill to make abortions safe and have the safety of women here in Louisiana. But we know that this bill is actually targeted to close abortion facilities and ban what is legal abortion in this country. So we want it to be known that we are definitely for the health and safety of women, and that is what Planned Parenthood stands for, and that's what the abortion facilities here in this state are all about. However, this bill is not about health and safety. This bill is about limiting access to abortions and preventive care for women.
Well, with advocates that are as diverse as the chairwoman of the Black Caucus and the governor of Louisiana, it would seem this bill might be hard to stop.
It does seem that way, Jim, and we do know that we have challenges ahead of us, but we also have some very strong allies. We had 40 people present at the Capitol on Wednesday at the House and Welfare Committee in the House, and we have allies such as the Coalition for Reproductive Freedom, Tulane Students, Law Students for Reproductive Justice, Southern University Law Students for Reproductive Justice, Med Students for Choice, Legislative Agenda for Women, Louisiana Roundtable, and so our list of allies and coalitions are strong as well and continue to be strong every day as more and more people are hearing about this bill.
297-5633 if you'd like to talk with Reagan Carter of Planned Parenthood in Louisiana and the Gulf Coast. And she says if this bill, sponsored by Katrina Jackson of Shreveport, if it passes, that at least three of the five abortion facilities in Louisiana would be shut down because I guess the doctors do not have admitting privileges within 30 miles of a hospital. Now, some would say that that's not an unreasonable expectation. How do you answer them?
Well, that's actually a great question, and one of the things that people are really misinformed about. Admitting privileges is very difficult for many physicians to obtain, and it has absolutely nothing to do with the standard of care of those physicians. It often has a lot to do with their practice and how sometimes they are unable to meet the requirements of admitting privileges to work in those hospitals for a certain amount of hours during a certain period of time. And so, you know, I just want to be clear that we are not against admitting privileges because we don't think that doctors who perform abortions are qualified physicians. That's totally not true. Admitting privileges is just simply not necessary for doctors who perform abortions. As a matter of fact, the American College of Obstetricians and Gynecologists also agrees that it's just unnecessary for doctors who perform abortions to have admitting privileges.
Which two of the, or where are they located, the two that would survive this legislation if it becomes law?
So based upon our research, the two that would survive would actually be two facilities that are located in North Louisiana, which would mean for women in South Louisiana, they could potentially have to drive, you know, 4 to 5 hours or up to 400 miles one way for access to legal abortion services.
The two in North Louisiana are in the Shreveport area?
The Shreveport and Monroe area.
Okay. So, but no facilities in Baton Rouge or New Orleans would survive, based on what you know.
That is the potential impact, yes.
Well, the sponsor is the legislative director for the Black Caucus, the chairwoman, Katrina Jackson. She is a Democrat. In the past, I recall this issue surfacing in 1990 in great vigor, and two bills that were passed by the legislature were vetoed by Governor Buddy Romer. But the Black Caucus was in camp with Governor Romer then. Most members, if not all, of the Black Caucus voted to continue abortion rights in Louisiana. But this time around, it seems that at least one member, and a prominent one at that, is in concert with the governor. Have you talked with Representative Jackson?
We have some of our allies who have spoken with Representative Jackson, and you know, that is certainly an interesting dynamic that she is the chair of the Black Caucus and she is an African-American female. However, I am very hesitant to say that everyone in the Black Caucus would agree with Representative Jackson, because we do know that there are some representatives and senators within the Black Caucus that understand this issue, that are all about access to women. And we do know that Representative Patricia Smith particularly understands the need for comprehensive sex education here in Louisiana and has been consistently pushing for students to have access to medically accurate, age-appropriate comp sex ed. And she has a bill this year, House Bill 369, and we all know that all of the research shows that when adolescents have access to comprehensive sex education, then teen pregnancy rates go down. Thus, the need for abortion services also goes down. And so, you know, we're really hesitant to say that everyone in the Black Caucus would support a bill of this nature because many understand the need for access to preventive care and health care services for women.
297-5633, if you'd like to join the conversation with Reagan Carter of Planned Parenthood in Louisiana. This bill cleared the House and Welfare Committee, Health and Welfare, with, I think, no dissenting votes this week. And now it goes to the full House, and it has the backing of the administration, and the sponsor is State Representative Katrina Jackson of Shreveport, a Democrat. Reagan Carter has a great political name, and this is certainly a major political fight that is forthcoming. Charles on North Foster, you're on the air with Reagan Carter of Planned Parenthood.
Good morning, gentlemen. Good morning to your guests. I'm an African-American man here in Baton Rouge, and I'm very disturbed that we've lost our only public hospital, Earl K. Long, and it was closed by bills from two African-American women.
Well, is that related to this topic? Is that related to this topic, Charles?
Yes, it is. Yes, Jim, let me ask my question, please.
Well, yes, go ahead and ask your question.
What
right
I would
now.
Like to know is, what is going on in the legislative Black Caucus that the governor can get African-American women to virtually pull health care opportunities and rights from under members of their own community. This is very disturbing. And thank you, Jim, for your holding on your censorship. I'll hang up and listen.
Thank you, Charles. Reagan, do you have a response to Charles's inquiry?
I certainly cannot respond to what's happening with other legislators, but I will say that we encourage everyone to assist us in advocating against House Bill 388 so that women can continue to have access.
And Senator Sharon Weston Broome is slated to be with us next Friday, and I'm sure this issue and others that Charles is interested in and others are will be discussed with Senator Broome. On the Senate side, do you have enough votes to stop this train, or is it going to the governor's desk? What do you think, Reagan Carter?
This bill certainly has lots of emotions around it, but it actually has emotions on both sides. And so we will continue to work with our allies and the organizations that I mentioned earlier on the call and hope to have others to join us in this and to advocate for this bill to be rescinded or voted against on the House floor and then moving to the Senate side. So we are welcoming others to join in us with this.
Your major opposition is related to the fact that you believe this is an effort to shut down abortion rights in Louisiana, or is it related to the construction of the way the bill is worded? What is the major a sticking point with those who are against it, such as Planned Parenthood, Gulf Coast?
So I think both of those issues are important. Jim, the bill is worded in such that it would make you assume that admitting privileges is what's going to keep the women in Louisiana safe. And admitting privileges is a tough issue for many to understand, and we put the health and safety of women first. And so admitting privileges is something that's simply not needed, which will in the end result in limited access for women. And so it will be both of those issues.
A listener asks, are there any abortion facilities outside the state that are closer to Baton Rouge than Shreveport?
That's an excellent question, and I don't know that answer, but there are facilities in the Mississippi and Alabama area. I'm not sure of the mileage range.
I think there's only one facility left in Mississippi, I think, and I think it's in Jackson, so that would be closer than Shreveport. But one way to stop abortion, at least legal abortion, would be to shut down all the clinics that provide them. And it seems that the opponents are doing a pretty good job as far as crafting legislation aimed at doing exactly this.
You are exactly right, Jim, and thank you so much for pointing that out. You're exactly
right.
Well,
I'm not taking a stand. I'm just saying this is a matter of fact. If there are no abortion clinics, then there won't be any legal abortions. Dan downtown.
Correct.
Go ahead, Dan. You're on with Reagan Carter. Hi, Dan.
Hi. Ms. Carter, does Representative Jackson have a concomitant bill to raise taxes in order to pay for the education and health care for the children who will be born because of the new law?
I don't have an answer for that, but if I look at the bills that she's proposed, I would say that bill is not on the table this year. Great question.
Okay. I remember when this issue was hot 24 years ago, Representative Charles R. Jones of New Orleans offered an amendment to require all lawmakers who voted to ban abortion to adopt a child. That amendment failed, but this is a serious business. We're going to see, I think, a heightened attention to it as it moves through the legislative process, and thus far it hasn't gained as much attention as you might expect. But this time around, if it goes into the House and is cleared the lower chamber and then goes to the Senate, gets support there, goes to the governor's desk, I think we're going to find it, with each step of the process, Reagan, more attention devoted to it.
That's certainly what we expect on our end, which is why we are continuously engaging our supporters and other advocates to join us to defeat House Bill 388.
Well, we will follow it with you, and thanks for the conversation today, Reagan Carter. Good to visit with you.
Thank you so much, Jim. I appreciate you having us on the show.
Take care, and we'll talk soon. And we'll be back with Claire Cruising with the Coalition for Medicare Choices after this 90-second pause on WRKN. This is Jim Engster. You are listening to 89.3 WRKF in Baton Rouge, 297-5633. Frank Barnett producing, 877-217-5757, wherever you are, Engstershow at WRKF.org online. We're joined now by Claire Cruising with the Coalition for Medicare Choices. The Obama administration is proposing a cut in the 2015 payments to Medicare Advantage in a move that has set off a ferocious campaign by the insurance industry to reverse the decision, and certainly it has stimulated conversation in places like this and elsewhere. And Claire, good morning to you.
Thank you so much for having me on.
Well, what will happen if these proposed cuts to Medicare Advantage go through?
These cuts will have a very big impact on seniors, and what we've seen is that when the program is cut, seniors face higher premiums, they pay higher out-of-pocket costs, and have fewer benefits. And I think it's important to even back up and explain that for many seniors, and for about 200,000 seniors in Louisiana, they've chosen Medicare Advantage for the better services, for the programs, and the benefits this important coverage option provides. So for these seniors, these cuts have a real impact in terms of what their coverage would look like for next year, and we are concerned that another round of cuts would have a devastating impact for them.
Well, 40 U.S. senators, including vulnerable Democrats like Barry Landrieu of Louisiana, Mark Pryor of Arkansas, Kay Hagan of North Carolina, and Mark Udall of Colorado, as well as Senator Chuck Schumer of New York, as well as many other Republicans, have sent a letter asking the Obama administration to prioritize beneficiaries' experience and minimize disruption to payment levels for 2015. This is apparently a hot-button political issue, Claire.
We've seen bipartisan support from both members of Congress on both sides of the aisle, Republicans, Democrats, senators, and congressmen stand up and take an active role in saying that Medicare Advantage should be protected. And this is a tremendous issue for seniors. We've seen seniors across the country stand up as well, and they want their voices heard. They've contacted their member of Congress. They've written letters. They've engaged on social media. So this, for them, is very much an issue that is top of mind. These cuts have a real impact in terms of the benefits and services that they rely on for their health. And again, this is a coverage option that they've chosen, and that is important for some of the basic and daily functions of maintaining a healthy lifestyle. So this is something that is very personal to them, and they're making sure that their voices are heard.
The president has been criticized for a budget deficit, although it is much lower than the one he inherited. If he wants to address this, then he's got to cut somewhere. And anytime there's a cut, there's a constituency. Is this a reasonable way to address the budget concerns, Claire?
So we are focused, and our goal here is to look at what these cuts do mean for seniors. And certainly, you know, in a budget debate like the one that we're having, there's always going to be conversations about where those cuts are taking place. But the fact is that the recent cuts proposed by the Medicare agency would include or would result in a double-digit cut to the program in just over 2 years. You can't cut a program that much and not expect seniors to be impacted. And we've already seen that seniors have fewer choices. They're paying higher premiums. They're paying more out-of-pocket as a result of the payment reductions to this program. And so that's why we're asking that the Medicare agency protect seniors, to use its regulatory discretion to make sure that they are protected from further cuts to the program.
297-5633, if you'd like to join us with Claire Cruising with the Coalition for Medicare Choices. Now, a question is how many people in Louisiana are affected by this? There are over 200,000 people in Louisiana, correct?
Correct.
Okay. 213,923, according to the numbers I have. Now, what is the dollar figure per month that would be impacted, or what would be the effect of these people if these cuts go through?
So across the board, we saw that in a recent analysis that seniors would face about $35 to $75 in payment cuts or higher premiums a month. That's about $420 to almost $900 in a year next year if these payment cuts do go through. And when you think about it from the context of a senior...
Go ahead, Claire. I'm sorry. You were saying that it was about $35 to $70 per month or somewhere between $400 and $500 a year. That's a significant amount of money for somebody living on a fixed budget, as many seniors do. So Louisiana is in the same ballpark as far as the average cuts?
Yes.
Okay. 297-5633 is your number. Outside the area, it's 877-217-5757. Inkster Show at WRKF.org. In our remaining time with Claire Cruising, who is with the Coalition for Medicare Choices. Jennifer and Tara. Jennifer, good morning. Jennifer, you're on the air with Claire.
Hello, and thank you for taking my call. I'm curious. Republicans are completely opposed to the Affordable Care Act, Medicaid expansion. Many of them are opposed to Medicaid expansion. And yet, they're also completely supporting the Medicare Advantage program and not cutting that. So I'm just curious as to how you justify continuing one program and saying it cannot be cut because it hurts seniors and it costs them more money and their health care suffers, and yet you don't support the other program because it costs too much money and you don't care that it would help people. So any answer on that?
So we are focused, again, and certainly, you know, as these budget debates are going on, we are focused on looking at what is the direct impact on seniors. And the cuts that have been proposed to Medicare Advantage, again, last year the program was cut by 6%, and now this year it's facing another cut of about 6%. So over the two-year period, that's almost a double-digit impact on the program. And what we're asking for is the Medicare agency to keep payment rates level this year and make sure that the impact on seniors is mitigated, because we are seeing that seniors are, again, they're losing either their choice of doctor, they may not have the opportunity of a Medicare Advantage plan in their area. They may be losing those important programs that help them transition from hospital to home. They may lose their benefits. And so these are substantial decreases in benefits and services that seniors do rely on. So we're asking for CMS and for lawmakers to stand up and say, this is too much. This is too big of a cut to this program.
Where do you get the 6% cut?
The 6% cut for this year takes into account all the factors that go into Medicare Advantage payments. So there's a number of very technical but very regulatory changes that CMS has in its discretion, and when you factor all of those in, including the cuts from the Affordable Care Act, including a new health insurance tax that goes into effect this year. That's where that 6% number is coming from.
A memo from House Majority Leader Eric Cantor highlights plans for Republicans to focus on the negative impact of seniors from the Medicare Advantage cuts. This issue obviously has a political component, as almost all issues do, and insurers have launched a preemptive seven-figure campaign to pressure the Obama administration to turn the various payment dials in order to offset a variety of cuts to the program. So the insurance industry obviously has a stake in this. Are you affiliated with that industry, Claire?
The Coalition for Medicare Choices is run and is part of AHIP, but again, this focus and our concern is looking at the impact of beneficiaries and what they're seeing. And we have seen time and time again that when the program is cut, as it was in the 1990s, as it was last year, that the impact hits seniors directly, and it means that they do lose their options. They are paying more for their coverage, or they don't have access to it altogether. So this is about the seniors. This is about their coverage, and about the changes that impact them.
Where do you think it's going on Capitol Hill?
So we have seen bipartisan support from both Republicans, from Democrats, who have stood up and have made it clear that the CMS should protect the program next year. We continue to see broad stakeholder concern from provider groups, from minority groups, consumer groups, employer groups, who have written letters as well urging the Medicare agency to protect the program and to keep payment rates flat. So there is a tremendous amount of support on Capitol Hill and from the healthcare industry overall that Medicare Advantage needs to be protected.
Do you think it'll have an impact on elections, depending on what happens?
You know, we have seen that this is a huge issue for seniors. And for them, this is, again, a very personal choice for them to enroll in Medicare Advantage. They have stood up. They are contacting their member of Congress. And these changes do have a real impact for them. So it continues. We continue to see seniors engaging. They're calling their members of Congress. They're going out and letting folks know that this is important for them. They're engaging on social media. So for them, this is an issue. This is something that is a priority.
297-5633. One of those who is following this closely is Senator Landrieu, who, of course, like it or not, is tied to the administration because she is a Democrat and the president is a Democrat, and she and some other vulnerable Democratic senators who are up for re-election this year, such as Mark Pryor of Arkansas, Mark Udall of Colorado, Kay Hagan of North Carolina, they have expressed some concern. Lynn in Melrose. Lynn, you're on the air with Claire Cruising. Hi, Lynn.
Hi, Jim. I'm really curious. I'm one of the people who you keep speaking for, a senior on fixed income with Medicare Advantage, and I'm not opposing this. In fact, I sympathize with the last caller whose question you didn't answer about the politics of Medicaid as well as Medicare. You keep focusing on the issue that the Republicans are harping on. I think it's biased what you're saying.
Well, I think one of the important points is if you look at the programs and services that are offered in Medicare Advantage, the simple fact that Medicare Advantage has proven to do a better job with care coordination, and that when folks look at where Medicare should be in terms of the type of health outcomes, Medicare Advantage is the model for that. So when you look across the programs, you see that Medicare Advantage has better health outcomes than the traditional fee-for-service program. The services and benefits that it provides are incredibly important to seniors and are critical to improving their health. So when you look across the board and see where the improvement is and where the comparison is, you'll see that Medicare Advantage is really one of the models in terms of what is working in care delivery. So when you look at what and how incredibly popular this program is, how many seniors are choosing to enroll in it, it doesn't make sense to...
All right, hold on. We want to get to a few inquiries with Claire Cruising in our remaining time with Claire, who is with the Coalition for Medicare Choices. Phyllis Montgomery writes, Claire, that Medicare Advantage is not Medicare. She says not all Medicare providers are included in the Medicare Advantage plans. Is that correct?
That's correct.
All right. And we've got Paula in Jefferson who's been waiting patiently. Paula, good morning. You're on with Claire.
Thank you. And that was my comment that isn't it true in the Medicare Advantage plans that you cannot go to just any doctor, that you're, that they're a select number. And secondly, this program does not take away Medicare from all seniors, so make sure that people know that you can still get Medicare. And I wondered if the monies that are cut, do they go back into the greater Medicare fund?
And that's an important distinction to make. The Medicare Advantage program is for those individuals who choose to enroll in private plans that are administering Medicare benefits. So there is a separate option. Seniors who choose to enroll in traditional Medicare can still do so, but Medicare Advantage is this another option available to them. In terms of the cuts that are made to the program, you know, those do go back, back to the government in terms of revenue, but it's also important to note that, you know, for seniors, that does mean that they are paying more out of pocket. It does mean that they're paying higher premiums, and it really does have an impact on their care.
Kyle Stewart writes, do you think it's fair to say that Republicans support maintaining health care for the elderly because they know that the elderly overwhelmingly vote Republican? Any thoughts?
I think that we're starting to see, again, across the board that, you know, seniors are contacting their members of Congress, whether they're Republicans or Democrats, and we recognize that seniors are overwhelmingly almost 1 million across the country who are affiliated with the Coalition for Medicare Choices are letting their lawmakers know that this is an important program, and we've seen more than 250 members of Congress stand up in support of Medicare Advantage.
Joellen Carney asks if Medicare Advantage is a private or public entity.
It is a private. It's Medicare benefits that are administered by private health insurance companies.
Well, with the name Medicare in the title, though, I think some might assume that it's a public entity.
They do. Medicare Advantage payments are partly come from the government as well.
Well, obviously, that's why these cuts are in play right now as a discussion topic. So 6% cut, you say, this year, and how much was it last year?
6%.
So we're talking real money. For those on Medicare, Claire, do you have any number on the percentage that are part of the Medicare Advantage program? I mentioned 200,000 in Louisiana. How does that compare with the total number of people who are recipients of Medicare?
So overall, there are about 15 million seniors. About approximately 29% of all Medicare beneficiaries are enrolled in Medicare Advantage across the country.
So about 3 out of 10.
Correct.
Okay. So a good number of people, no doubt, would be affected. But it is an offshoot that is private from the Medicare that has been around for half century.
Correct.
Okay. Well, we thank you for joining us today and for providing some insight on the proposed cuts to Medicare Advantage. Thank you, Claire Cruzing.
Thank you so much for having me on.
And we shall return with Sam Irwin, who's written a book about something near and dear to many of us, Louisiana crawfish, back in 90 seconds. This is Jim Inkster. You're listening to 89.3 WRKF in Baton Rouge, and Sam Irwin is with us, a public relations specialist who has written a book that is out and about. Tomorrow, Sam will be at Perkins Rose Barnes & Noble at 2 o'clock with Louisiana Crawfish, A Succulent History of the Cajun Crustacean. Good morning.
Good morning, Jim.
This is a topic that should be easy to write about. I can almost feel and taste crawfish as we speak.
Well, it was a fun subject to write about, but no one had written the history of the Louisiana industry, and it was an industry that's been born in recent memory.
Well, we call ourselves a crawfish capital of the world, at least Breaux Bridge does, and I think some other communities have tried to latch on to that as well. But crawfish, or crayfish, they're popular in other places.
And that's kind of a shame for Louisiana consumers, because, those crawfish farmers, they've gotten smart, and they've exported it pretty well to Dallas, Atlanta, Chicago.
When did our affinity for crawfish begin in this state?
Oh, I think as soon as the first Frenchman came here.
Well, crawfish are not prevalent in all places.
No, but they certainly are here.
Well, they are. Why are they more prevalent here?
I think the habitat is just perfect for crawfish. You know, if you look at the map, we've got water all over the place.
Water, and it's not just water. You've got to have a warm climate, don't you?
Yeah, but you know, I found reports that crawfish are thriving in areas in Chicago.
Well, the hunt for red crawfish is the thing. And Sam Irwin is following it, introduced to Louisiana by the swamp dwellers of the Atchafalaya Basin. It's a regional favorite, and the industry is now in the millions, hundreds of millions of dollars a year, isn't it?
In 2010, it was right around a value of $200
million. $200 million. In the nation or in our state?
In our state.
In our state.
Yeah.
$200 million. So that's real money in a state that is always looking for real money. How many people are involved in the industry in our state?
That I don't really know, because all you have to do is drive around and you'll see a little sign that says crawfish here. It's hard to keep track of them. I think there's probably about 1,500 Atchafalaya Basin fishermen and probably somewhere in the neighborhood of 800 crawfish farmers.
Well, it's something that's with us that I don't think is going away. Our affinity for crawfish is such that generations long after us will probably be tasting crawfish and reading Crawfish, A Succulent History of the Cajun Crustacean.
Well, it's certainly market-driven.
Well, how much so?
Well, for instance, the crawfish technology for growing crawfish in ponds was pretty much perfected in the 60s and 70s, but the rice farmers didn't really get on board because they were getting such a good price for rice. Well, in 82, the price of rice dipped, and those rice farmers said, we need to find another crop, and so they started putting crawfish in their crop rotation, and in 4 years, the acreage for crawfish ponds went from 60,000 to 120,000.
Okay. Terry on Highland asks about health concerns. Are there some issues involving sanitation that should be considered if one consumes a lot of crawfish?
Well, no, I don't think so. You know, they wash them pretty well. That's what the market demands. They want nice, clean, large crawfish. Peeled crawfish is thoroughly inspected by the departments of health, and they've got great conditions. The peeling rooms are cool. Everything is done according to sanitation standards.
What was the biggest surprise in your research that you didn't just sit down at a typewriter and start pecking out this story? I'm sure you did a lot of voluminous research over the years.
The biggest surprise to me was the genesis of Chinese crawfish. And it is well documented where those crawfish came from.
Mm-hmm.
But you'll have to read the book, because I'm not going to reveal it here.
All right. Well, some say that crawfish are at least 30 million years old.
They're a Jurassic animal, and Jay Hooner said the crawfish are a smart animal. They're survivors.
Well, I'm sure some would say they can't be more than 5,000 years old, but some say they're as much as 115 million years old.
Well, they've managed to survive pretty well, regardless of the age.
Well, we're not going to have a scarcity of crawfish, are we?
Well, when the weather warms up, we'll have more crawfish than we need. But look, I want to get back to the health concerns about the crawfish.
Yeah.
One of the delightful things I learned about was Al Scaramuzza, who was the crawfish tycoon of New Orleans. And Al Scaramuzza did these fantastic commercials for his business, Seafood City. And he did commercials where there would be a listless patient sitting down, and he'd prescribe crawfish for him to make him feel better. So crawfish makes everybody feel better.
Another question from a listener to Sam Irwin, the author of Louisiana Crawfish, A Succulent History of the Cajun Crustacean. How many festivals are there in Louisiana devoted to crawfish? Do you know?
Well, there's only really one that I'm concerned about since I'm a resident of Brobridge, and that's the Brobridge Crawfish Festival. But there's something called the Pinchapalooza. There's one in Chalmette. There's one in Shreveport. And really, all you need to have a crawfish festival is music, libation, and crawfish.
You got to have libation, too?
Well, most folks think that the libation goes really well with crawfish.
Really?
Not without a doubt.
Really?
That's what I've heard.
Okay. So when did the Brobridge Festival begin?
It began with a celebration of its centennial of its incorporation in 1959. That's when Speaker of the House, Bob Angell, who was Earl K. Long's hand-picked Speaker of the House, got a resolution passed creating, naming Brobridge as the crawfish capital of the world.
55 years later, it's still going strong. How many people converge in Brobridge for this?
Well, there's been estimates of upwards of 300,000. I think the most we ever really had there was 100,000. And now the festival's a little scaled down, so probably 30,000 to 50,000 go.
But it's a big thing for that town, and it's held generally same time of the year, isn't it?
First weekend in May,
same weekend as the Kentucky Derby.
And, you know, Haywood Hale Brune came after he called the Kentucky Derby, and he came in 1974. And Brune was the Kentucky Derby
I remember,
specialist.
CBS.
And he came and called the races.
I bet he had more fun in Brobridge than he would have in Louisville, and that's a pretty fun place that time of the year.
He did have a lot of fun, and boy, I remember the jacket he was wearing. It was very, very loud.
Did he get stains on it from the crawfish?
I'm sure he was well protected.
Now, when you've been consuming a lot of crawfish, that scent kind of trails with you. You got to be ready for that, for those who are saying, you know, I'm really going to try this based on Sam's description.
Well, it is a strong smell. When visitors came into my grandfather's crawfish peeling plant, they were taken aback.
Most people find it to be an appealing scent, though.
Well, generally it is, yeah, but it is powerful. And crawfish is good for what ails you.
Is there anything more symbolic of our culture, though, than crawfish?
I don't think so. Revon Reed, the great Cajun raconteur and teacher and educator, he said that the American symbol should be the crawfish.
Okay.
Because the crawfish will not leave its post, Jim. Whoa. He'll try to stop the locomotive.
When did we start calling them mud bugs?
Oh, we don't call them mud bugs. Other people call them mud bugs. Well, journalists call them mud bugs.
Okay, all right. Well, they're looking for another word. But in Louisiana, we don't say crayfish. We say crawfish. Why do we do that?
And that's peculiar because crayfish, the word crayfish, is more akin to the French word écrevisse than crawfish is. There was a book in the 1880s written by Huxley who identified them as crayfishes. No, not Aldous Huxley. I can't remember his first name, but it's in the book.
Yeah, well, the hunt for red crayfish is the crawfish. Sam Irwin's passion, and he's from Brobridge, so I imagine you thought about writing this for a long time.
Actually, it never entered my mind to write a book about crawfish. You know, everybody's got theories about crawfish, and there's lots of books about crawfish and consumption in Louisiana, and I really didn't give it much thought, but a book publisher called me up, History Press, and they said, what kind of book can you write for us? And they threw out my first idea, and then I said, okay, I'll write a book about crawfish for you, mm-hmm. And they took it.
Well, the man from Brobridge is the perfect guy. Did you have some for breakfast this morning?
I would have wished. I saw a recipe in the Advocate yesterday that looks great for crawfish soup.
What was in it? Other than crawfish.
It's crawfish and potato soup, and you just put in mixing the crawfish with the potato soup, and well, of course, you got to add some red pepper, lots and lots of red pepper, I'm sure.
Red pepper and crawfish are better when they're hot, right?
Well, to me, the best crawfish to eat are the freshly peeled crawfish that still have the crawfish fat on them. Mm-hmm. That's what makes the crawfish taste like a crawfish.
Okay, well. This is a season for crawfish, and coming soon to Brobridge, we'll have the annual Crawfish Festival of the World, and something that nobody should go without prior to attending this festival or having crawfish at this time of the year is Sam Irwin's Louisiana Crawfish, A Succulent History of the Cajun Crustacean. And tomorrow you'll be able to see and Sam in all his glory, 2 o'clock at Perkins Rose, Barnes & Noble.
Thanks, Jim.
Thank you. And now we're joined by a lady who knows a thing or two about crawfish, Darlene Adams-Rowland with the Big River Economic and Agricultural Development Alliance, BRETA, and also the Red Stick Farmers Market. Good morning to you.
Good morning, Jim.
Yeah, it's been a while since you've been with us, but you're still going. How many years now?
5 years.
5 years. So you can you get crawfish at the Red Stick Farmers Market?
Well, we have a lot of Louisiana seafood, but we mainly focus on wild-caught shrimp, fish, and crab.
That's heresy to Sam Irwin. I can see him grimacing right now, but that other stuff is pretty good, too.
It's delicious. It's all flash frozen the minute it's caught on this boat, which is a new technology, so you know you're getting the highest quality, freshest seafood.
Well, what's the latest with the farmers market?
Well, we have a new program actually coming up, kicking off this Saturday for kids. We've really wanted to engage kids more at the market, and our Red Stick Sprouts is our new kids club, and it really works to teach kids about where their food comes from and healthy eating so that we hope that they can develop some healthy lifelong habits.
Red Stick Sprouts, that's an interesting and catchy name.
It
so
is.
Can Sam and I join Red Stick Sprouts?
Well, we'd love to have y'all down there, but it is designed more for the 12 and under crowd. And we'll have a little tent there where you can come sign up and get a cute tote bag, and there'll be some fun activities for the kids. And food sampling, we'll have a cooking demo by Eric Arsenault at the City Club. And also Louisiana culinary students will be there with some food sampling of fresh fruits and veggies.
Well, you've been talking on our show and others for some time about the Red Stick Farmers Market, and I'm sure you're pleased with the reception, and obviously you're finding new and innovative ways to attract people of all ages.
Yeah, it's going great. We have had a bit of a tough winter, as everyone should know, that it's been a little hard on Louisiana farmers. So if you've been to the market, people ask us a lot of times, where are the farmers? But just like Mike being hard to grow some things in your yard this winter, it's been tough for farmers, but we're on the upswing, and the Louisiana strawberries are enjoying this nice sunny weather, so we should have a nice big supply of those soon at the market.
So what time do you get started on Saturday?
So our market runs from 8 a.m. to 12, and that's at our downtown location at 5th and Main Street, and the kids' activities will be from 9 to 11.
And coming next month, you have the Mobile Farmers Market.
Yes, the Red Stick Mobile Farmers Market was started last year and made possible by generous support from many community partners. But it has four locations that it operates in North Baton Rouge and also in South Baton Rouge weekly. It will begin the spring season in mid-April, and so we're excited about getting back on the road with that.
Mm-hmm. Well, the food is great in Louisiana, and sometimes we eat far too much. We don't get enough exercise, but you have preach that we need to eat more healthy. How does the farmers market help us do that?
Well, if you've never been to the farmers market, just the variety and of produce that you can find, and also the freshness. I mean, everything there is literally picked the day before it comes to market by the farmers. You can meet them, talk to them. They can give you recipe suggestions. Every Saturday we have our Fresh from the Market cooking demonstration at 10 a.m. and that's at inside Main Street Market, and it also has various chefs come in from around town to show off, you know, their dishes and also show you ways to incorporate some of these items you might not be that familiar with.
So tomorrow at 8 o'clock, 5th and Main, at Main, it's the Red Stick Farmers Market, and you, after all these years, you've gotten bigger and better every year, haven't you?
We hope so. We appreciate all our loyal customers, as do the farmers, and we're excited to kick off this new program with the kids. We'll have activities each month, and another neat component of it is that kids can earn tokens each time they come to the market, which kind of gives them buying power to buy their own fresh fruits mm-hmm. and vegetables, so it's a neat part of the program.
Who will be the first Red Stick Sprout?
That is yet to be seen. We'll see.
I think Jim is trying.
Jim, if you come down, we'll let you be the first sprout.
I'm all for that. I'd like to go back in time and be 12 or 11 again. But the fruits and the vegetables, they're being picked right now.
That's right.
Right as we speak.
That's right.
They're going to be fresh as fresh can be tomorrow at 8 o'clock in the morning.
8 o'clock, you better come early if you want the best selection.
And you have, there's no doubt you love what you do, right?
Oh, definitely. It's great to work with the farmers and really see the dedication and the passion they have for what they do.
Darlene, for those who'd like to know more about the Farmers Market or the Big River Economic and Agricultural Development Alliance, how do they find out more from you?
You can visit our website. It's bretta.org. That's like the word bread with an A on the end, .org.
Bretta.org from Darlene Adams-Rowland, who will be at the Red Stick Farmers Market tomorrow, along with a few sprouts like Sam and maybe yours truly. We thank you for joining us today. Have a great weekend. We'll be back Monday. Until then, for Frank Barnett and Bianca Webb, I'm Jim Engster. Stay tuned.
Podcasts of The Jim Engster Show are available at WRKF.org. The Jim Engster Show is produced in association with the Louisiana Radio Network and is copyrighted by WRKF for the private use of its audience. Any other use of any portion of this program without the written consent of WRKF is prohibited. The views expressed on this program are those of the participants and do not necessarily reflect the views of WRKF, its officers, and members.